Ma'am, an invitation here. Ma'am, delivered by hand. And ma'am, I notice the stationery's engraved and very grand. Petra, too exciting just when I need it. Petra, such elegant writing, so chic you hardly can read it. What do you think? Who can it be? Even the ink, no, here, let me. Your presence, just think of it, Petra, is kindly. It's at a chateau, requested, etc., etc. Madame Leonora, oh no. A weekend in the country.
We're invited.
What a horrible plot. A weekend in the country.
I'm excited.
No, you're not.
A weekend in the country. Just imagine.
It's completely depraved.
A weekend in the country.
It's insulting.
It's engraved.
Is that woman? Is that arm felt?
Oh, the actress.
Oh, the school. She may hope to make her charm felt. But she's mad if she thinks I would be such a fool as to weekend in the country.
How insulting.
And I've nothing to wear.
A weekend in the country.
Here, the last place I'm going is there.
Guess what? An invitation.
Guess who begins with an A? Armfelt, is that a relation to the decrepit Desiree?
Guess when we're asked to go, sir, see, sir, the date there. Guess where a fancy chateau, sir.
Guess too who's lying in wait. They're setting her traps, fixing her face.
Darling, perhaps a change of pace.
Oh,
a weekend in the country would be charming and the air would be fresh.
A weekend with that woman.
In the country.
In the flesh.
I've some business with her mother.
It's business.
Oh, no doubt. But the business with her mother would be hardly the business I'd worry about.
Just a weekend in the country. Smelling jasmine.
Watching little things grow.
A weekend in the country.
Go!
My darling will simply say no.
Oh. A weekend.
How very amusing.
A weekend.
But also inept.
A weekend. Of course we're refusing.
Au contraire, you must accept.
Oh.
A weekend in the country.
But it's frightful.
No, you don't understand. A weekend in the country is delightful if it's planned. Wear your hair down and a flower. Don't use makeup, dress in white. She'll grow older by the hour and be hopelessly shattered by Saturday night. Spend a weekend in the country.
We'll accept it.
I had a feeling you would.
A weekend in the country. Yes. It's only polite that we should.
Good.
Well,
I've an intriguing little social item.
What?
Out of the Armfeld family manse.
Well, what?
Merely a weekend, though I thought it might amuse you to know who's invited to go, this time with his pants.
You don't mean...
I'll give you three guesses.
She wouldn't.
Reduce it to two.
It can't be.
It nevertheless is.
Enderman.
Right, score one for you.
Aha.
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 A weekend in the country, we should try it.
How I wish we'd been asked.
A weekend in the country, peace and quiet.
We'll go masked.
A weekend in the country.
Uninvited, they'll consider it odd.
A weekend in the country, I'm delighted.
Oh my God.
And the shooting should be pleasant if the weather's not rough. Happy birthday, it's your present.
But
you haven't been getting up nearly enough. And a weekend in the country.
It's perverted.
Pack my quiver and bow. A weekend at the country. At exactly 2:30 we go.
We can't.
We shall.
We shan't.
I'm getting the car and we're motoring down.
Yes, I'm certain you are, but I'm staying in town.
Go and pack my suit. My suit.
Pack everything.
Are you sure it's all right?
We're going to refuse.
We're off. Take the cars, the shake, champagne, and
tell.
We're up and away, what a beautiful day for a weekend in the country.
How amusing, how delightfully droll.
A weekend in the country, while we're losing our control.
A weekend in the country, how enchanting on the manicured lawns.
A weekend in the country, with the panting and the yawns.
With the crickets and the pheasants, and the orchards and the hay. With the servants and the peasants, we'll be laying our plans while we're playing croquet for a weekend in the country. So inactive that one has to lie down. A weekend in the country.
Country, the bees in their hives, the shallow worldly figures, the frivolous lives, the
weekend in the country. How enchanting on the manicure lawns. A weekend in the country with the pansy and the yawns. With the crickets and the pheasants and the orchards and the hay. With the servants and the peasants. We'll be playing our plans while we're playing for a game. On a weekend in the country. So inactive as a hassle like that. A weekend in the country where we're twice as upset as in 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 shah.
Weekend in the Country from Stephen Sondheim's A Little Night Music, sung by Simon Russell Beale, Daniel Evans, Maria Friedman, Caroline O'Connor, Julian Ovenden and Jenna Russell with the Proms Sondheim Ensemble, who we also heard at the start of this selection from A Little Night Music performing The Night Waltz. David Charles Abell conducting the BBC Concert Orchestra this Saturday night as the Proms celebrates Stephen Sondheim at 80. Title of A Little Night Music, a play on Mozart, the show inspired by an Ingmar Bergman film, which brings us to the end of Act 1 of tonight's Prom. Bryn Terrible still to come, singing from Sweeney Todd. We'll hear from Company, A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum, and merrily we roll along before the end of the show. First of all, we meet Stephen Sondheim and tonight's conductor, David Charles Abell, who joined me earlier on stage across the road at the Royal College of Music.
All downhill from here.
Wow. That's quite a welcome. You arrived in London at 6:30 this morning.
Yes, indeed.
You love London. I've
been an Anglophile since I was 20 years old, since my first visit. Absolutely.
You got good reviews here for Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum.
You really know, yes. They were the first good reviews I ever got were in London, so...
Is there something, though, here about... Are we more open to language? Are we more open to
words? Oh, indeed, of course. Well, that's one of the reasons I think I got good reviews on Forum, because it takes some delight in language, and that is rarely appreciated in the United States. It's not really what the theater has been about. It's more so now. It's more so now. Oddly enough, I think it was the advent of pop music where people started to listen to lyrics more and more. Not that pop music lyrics relate so much to the theater, but that... people started to listen to what was being said. But certainly Forum was the first time lyrics that I'd written were really listened to. I mean, over here. It was exhilarating for me. It was nice.
Tonight's 80th birthday concert includes songs from Forum, from Company, from Merrily We Roll Along, from Sweeney Todd. David Charles Abell, how did you go about putting it together? Because for every song that's in there, there could be 10 others.
Putting it together, did you say?
Yes, well, I thought that was rather clever.
I started by re-listening to all of the original cast albums of Steve's shows. And in listening, thinking about which songs would work out of context, out of a theatrical context. And also, which songs could work in the Albert Hall. And for that reason, I wasn't able to consider songs such as Getting Married Today from Company, which is a very, very fast patter song. And in a 5,000-seat arena, most of those words would have gotten lost. So that reduced the list slightly, but a surprising number of your songs do work out of context. So I had a list of... I could have made 4 concerts out of the list that I had. So I had to winnow it down. And what I wanted to do was to... create mini suites from the shows wherever possible so that you would get a sense of the story and the development of the show. So from Night Music, for instance, we have 3 songs in a row, and Sweeney Todd, 3 songs. So it sort of tells the story of the show in a very small way, but enough to give you a sense of the atmosphere of the show. And I also wanted to preserve as much as possible the original orchestrations. Not because there aren't good orchestrations that are done for revivals, But, well, for two reasons, really. One is that the originals are the ones that are created under the supervision of the entire creative team. And so you and your collaborators got together, and everyone thought,
well,
this is what we
need.
Well,
the orchestrations really are the work of the orchestrators. I know very little about orchestration. I know a little, but I could never orchestrate something myself because I wasn't trained to do so. And the orchestrators, I've been fortunate enough, and I'm using the word very advisedly, are the top and are the best orchestrators in the last 50 years on Broadway. Jonathan Tunick, in particular, who's done most of my shows, is, in my opinion, the best orchestrator in the history of Broadway.
Yes.
And the second best is Michael Starobin, who did *Sunny in the Park with George* and *Assassins*, and so it's really their work. And I'm not being modest, but you know, obviously we consult and I go over each number with them, but I don't say, "Oh, I don't think there should be a clarinet there." I'm fond of telling the anecdote that Jonathan Tunick likes me to make a tape of anything I write because he gets ideas from the way I attack the piano, which is my only instrument. And I remember when he heard I played him the score of, or half the score anyway, of A Little Night Music, and he said, do you have any sense of what you want? I said, yeah, I'd like the feeling of perfume rising from the orchestra pit. He said, oh, you mean strings. And that's what he does. He translates. I go into these vague images, and he translates immediately into, okay, no clarinets. You know.
We're seeing lots of the shows done now on a much, much smaller basis. I mean, what John Doyle's done with Sweeney Todd or company. Well, I was going to say what you think. You've answered it by saying, unfortunately.
Well, you know, shows are very expensive. The unions used to insist that there be a minimum number of players in any given house, in any given theater, and they have finally reneged on that because if you wanted, for example, an orchestra of 16, they still made you pay for 26, according to union rules, so there'd be 10 players playing pinochle in the basement and getting paid full scale. And that was a practice, an infamous practice that took years. What happened was that the grosses for the Broadway houses started to go down, people started to lose work, shows started to lose money, fewer and fewer were done, and finally the unions gave in. And now there are still rules, but they're much more flexible now and lower demands. And as a result, a lot of shows are cutting down on their, a lot of shows cut down on their orchestras because it's so expensive. And it's a shame because what's happening now is there's a whole battle over how much synthesized music can use because it you know, a synthesizer can throw five musicians out of work, and it's a constant battle, and a lot of shows now are being done with chamber sized orchestras, which suits certain shows very well. I've been very lucky because a show like Little Night Music can take a chamber sized orchestra. It's on Broadway now with a band of eight. And on the other hand, when I hear David and his orchestra, as you will hear tonight, I sure miss that sound because there's very little as thrilling as a full orchestra in a reverberant hall. It's really something.
And you've talked about the classical music influences in your life, Ravel in particular, Milton Babbitt, who taught you.
Mm-hmm.
What did you learn from him and from them and from studying?
Studying with Milton Babbitt was the avant-gardist's avant-garde. He's 94 years old now, and he's still far ahead of every other composer. Not that's an exaggeration, but I mean he still writes extremely advanced music. And but I studied with him because I wanted to study composition. I went to a college with a very small music department. And I hadn't intended to major in music. The music department consisted of two men, and one of them taught piano, essentially. The other one taught basic harmony, but very basic. And however, he was such a brilliant, for me, a brilliant teacher, a teacher that I cottoned on to, that I ended up majoring in music. I had not intended to major in music when I went to college. I intended to major in mathematics, and then I decided that was not much of a career for what I wanted. And also, by that time, I'd met Oscar Hammerstein. I wanted to do what he did. So this man was named Robert Barrow, and he suggested that I study with Milton Babbitt because I didn't want to study in an academic atmosphere. I didn't want to study musicology. I didn't want to study anything except theory. and harmony and composition. And so Milton Babbitt, who, as I say, was the most advanced of the composers, in fact, the first man, one of the first two men to use synthesized music, he also was a songwriter manqué. And when I met him, he was writing a show for Mary Martin based on Helen of Troy, called Helen of Troy, New York. But Troy, New York is a well-known city in New York. And so Robert Barrow suggested him because he knew that he was really interested in it, because he wanted to be a songwriter, and he could teach me both. So we had four-hour sessions, and the first hour we would analyze Jerome Kern and De Silva, Brown and Henderson, who were his favorite songwriters, or Gershwin. And the next 3 hours would be, you know, the Jupiter Symphony and a Bach fugue, and that's what. So I had both worlds going at once, and that was what Milton Babbitt was about.
David and I were speculating earlier on as to what might have happened had you gone a different way.
Well, I mean, clearly you could have chosen to become a composer, to pursue a career as a composer of concert music.
I was always interested in the theater. Again, it was partly Oscar, you know.
Yeah.
But no, I was always interested in the theater. I could never have just written music.
But you had lots of friends in the classical world. Did you ever encounter any hostility or snobism?
No, actually, I don't have a lot of friends in the classical world.
I'm thinking of Lenny.
Well, Lenny, yeah, but Lenny wrote theater music.
Yes.
He wrote a lot of theater music. I loved writing theater music. I think they envy popular success, but they don't envy it enough to want to write for anything except opera, which is, you know, sometimes popular, but more often than not, really just another theatrical form of what you'd call concert music. Yeah. But occasionally, you know, they make stabs at writing shows, but there's a lot more to writing a show, unfortunately, than writing songs.
Yes.
We're hearing some wonderful voices tonight. I mean, it's such a starry evening, but they come from so many different backgrounds. We've got, you know, Bryn Terrible, who comes from the opera world. Judy Dench, who is a lyric actress, whatever that means. We've got people who have done a lot of kind of Sondheim in the past. I wonder how you think about writing for four different voices. Do you normally have an actor in mind when a project starts off?
Rarely. Sometimes an actor comes with a project. When we were writing Gypsy, Ethel Merman was part of the producer's idea. He not only took an option on Gypsy Rosalie's memoir, but Ethel Merman came. She had wanted to do it because it had been sent to her, so she came with it. And I wrote the part in Company that Elaine Stritch plays. I wrote for her. And when I was writing Sweeney Todd, in order to entice Angela Lansbury, I wrote two songs for her. Once she said yes, then I thought of her as I wrote and designed the part. But it's always a mistake, at least in commercial theater, to write for a specific star or a specific personality, because they may suddenly get a movie offer that they'd rather do. And that's happened to a number of people I know. I remember Arthur Lawrence wrote a show for Lena Horne, called Hallelujah Baby, and she was most enthusiastic, and they were close friends. And about a month before the show was to go in rehearsal, she called me. She said, "Oh, listen, Arthur, I really had this wonderful tour and this chance in Las Vegas," and he had written the show for her. So it's dangerous to write for a specific person. It probably is in the opera world too, you know. People get sick, and I rarely write for voice. The other thing is, you have to be flexible. I mean, I remember when I wrote Sunday in the Park with George, I had designed George as a bass baritone because he was repressed, and I thought that was the kind of voice. And Dot, this, you know, very, I won't say flighty, but volatile, mercurial girl, I thought would be, if not a soprano,